Sometimes you choose courage, and at other times it's forced upon you. Courage Unraveled is a podcast series where you get to listen to insights, discussions, conversations, and stories from people from all walks of life. You'll be served with dollops of courage, resilience, and strength here. So come along and be educated and inspired. You just may find new ways to flex your own courage muscle. My name is Sana Turnock, and I'm your host. Rebecca Hannon spent many years in real estate, but found it wasn't her calling. In this episode, Rebecca shares what it's like to overcome her fear and become a professional speaker in her area of passion, which is wellness. Learn about her journey as a public speaker, how she was discouraged to pursue public speaking in the wellness industry, and why it's important to choose your wizards wisely. It's a real privilege to be able to share these inspiring podcasts of courage with you. The work undertaken takes many hours to put together and is self-funded. Become a Courage Unraveled patron on Patreon, and not only will you be supporting the podcast, you will also be helping yourself by investing in your own courage. Get access to pre-release episodes and Patreon-y specials. It's easy being a patron, and the first tiers are less than 2 coffees per month. Cultivate and flex your courage muscle by signing up for a one-to-one Grow Into My Courage program and grab your very own journal. You grow your courage muscle by activating it. Listen to the podcasts, grab yourself the courage journal, sign up to the Grow Into My Courage program, and become a patron. After this episode, head over to courageunraveled.com. It's all happening there. Grow into your courage today. Hello, Rebecca, and welcome to Courage Unraveled.
Hello, Sana. How are you?
I'm great. Today, you wanted to talk about wanting to become a professional speaker. To provide context, what were you doing before you moved into public speaking?
I was in real estate for a decade. And prior to that, I was in the health and wellness industry. I had my own boutique, personal training and wellness sort of studio back then as well. So a fairly diverse career.
When did you actually decide to become a professional speaker?
It's something I'd wanted to do for a really long time. So back in 2008, I was setting myself up to do it back then, and the global financial crisis hit. We had 2 businesses and I closed down my little boutique personal training studio. I went into real estate, which was really to keep us afloat. And back then it was pretty tough, obviously. The first
year
was really hard. I looked around at other work after we sold our real estate business and realised that in Margaret River, to earn the money I wanted to support my family, I needed to stay in real estate because there wasn't really a ceiling on my limit. So it's something I had in place a long time ago, but it didn't kind of happen for whatever reason. And after a decade in real estate, I just sort of thought, why am I still doing this? It's not something I really wanted to do. And so I pursued my passion in wanting to share my stories and help other people.
Okay, you started to go down that path. You discovered that you had a passion and you weren't acting on it. So when you decided to start acting on it, what did that path start to look like? What opportunities opened up?
It wasn't what I expected at first. So I thought you'd just go out there and start talking and that's how it would be. But it was a much more challenging experience than I anticipated, and you have to be very clear about what your message is. So I started to speak to some people within the industry that I knew. I reached out to them and asked them for some help, and they put me in touch with a few groups and a few other people. And that's sort of when the daunting but totally rewarding journey began, really.
2008, 2009?
I was in real estate for a bit short of a decade actively in it. I was a silent director for a couple of years. So it was about 2016 I pursued it.
You've spoken about challenges, tears and heartache along the way.
Yep.
Could you just share with us a little bit as to what that meant for you so that we get a sense of, from your perspective, what it was like?
Basically, you've got to come up with a signature story. That is your story that you unpack and you share with the world. So even just formulating, that's not easy. And I had several business coaches that helped me to actually pull that together and do that. And then from there, I started to go and contact people and start promoting myself as a speaker. I also had to sort of start to get very clear about what I wanted to speak about, what my topic was. And that was quite challenging because you needed a lot of mentors along the way, and some of them are fantastic and some of them, look, they all serve their purpose, but they can unravel you in the process as well. And I had a few that were going, you want to speak about wellness, you'll starve. I started looking at what else I could speak about, and a really wonderful mentor reached out to me and just said, Beck, what are you doing? This just is not you. We need to realign things and get back to what you all about. So, yeah, it's been an interesting process, and also just stepping up around people that are high-profile speakers, and you just feel all these feelings of inadequacy and I'm not enough and I'm an imposter really start to come out at you. It's been interesting, but lots and lots of fun as well.
How did you work through those feelings of the imposter and being inadequate? You know, what have you done to move through that? Because that's fear-based, right? We know that. But what have you done?
Totally fear-based. One of the activities we used to have to do, the speaking group I was part of and still are, you have to get up and you have to say what you did in 6 words. And I remember getting up and going, bleh, 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 and didn't really even. It was just this jumbled sentence, and all these other people were very articulate in what they did. All the way home, I practiced what I was going to say, so it just rolled off my tongue. I also allowed myself to be really vulnerable and have people that were much, much better than me critique what I did and give me tips on how to be able to do it better. Attended lots and lots of workshops and still continue to do so. It's just been an ongoing process of learning and watching what do I like in the way a person presents and what things don't I like. So I start to sort of bring together the things that I find enjoyable, because then that's aligning with who I am as well.
What have you noticed in your eyes makes a good presenter?
A compelling story, so having something that's really engaging and compelling, sharing the challenges along the way. This sounds really harsh. We often don't really care about how wonderful other people are. We want to know about struggles, because that way then we can relate to them. So knowing that somebody's gone through some challenges and what they've done to be able to overcome them are really helpful. Somebody who's very clear and grounded in what they're presenting and saying, it's very easy to sort of let nerves take over and dance around on the stage, whereas you've got to sort of really learn to ground yourself and be very strong and own the space that you're in. I think also authenticity, you know, you want to be able to feel like if you were to get off the stage to speak to that speaker, that conversation would be the same as what they are on stage. So it feels conversational. Sometimes it can be a bit of a theatre performance.
Clearly for you, don't like the theatre performance in that sense. What else would turn you away from a speaker or listening more to what someone has to say?
I'm not really overly keen on that hard sell. I've been around some speakers that have done that. And don't get me wrong, we all do need to sell, and there's ways of doing it. But that feeling of a bit of pressure, I don't particularly enjoy that, or that scarcity. This is only available for a limited time type thing. I just switch off from that now. That's where I'm at within this journey. Also, a lot of boasting about yourself, that's never really particularly enjoyable to watch either. Humbleness is very appealing, I think.
It's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes someone can let you know about their skill sets or their achievements, and they do it in a really nice, relaxed, conversational way. You're fine with that. Then there are those people who just go blah, 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 and they trumpet it out and you just close off. There's a real skill in that, being able to say articulately but without making it sound as though you're boasting.
Yes, yes, definitely.
In your training, have you learned the art of that through any of the coaches that you've worked with along the way?
I have, and I've played around with various methods. So I did do a little bit of selling from the stage when I first started, and it just didn't align for me. It's just not who I am. And I've seen other people who do it amazingly, and I have full respect for them who do it. There is a gentle way that you can do things where it's almost like sort of seeding throughout your story of what you're doing and just being gentle. But really, if you're being authentic and sharing your story, people come to you anyway.
You spoke earlier, the coach or coaches were saying that the topic of wellness, gosh, you're not going to make any money out of that. And that was where you were going. So how did you feel when you heard that from someone perhaps you respected?
Yeah, gutted, to be honest. It was challenging. It unraveled me for a while, to be honest, and I started to look at other things that I could do. I sort of thought of looking at being a speaker in leadership only or in sales, because I'd spent a decade in sales, but it just wasn't what I wanted to do. I've done it for so many years and I've got a pretty big why behind it. And, you know, what I have learned along this process, though, and this was a really wonderful lesson, is that it's just an opinion. That's somebody's opinion. And just because that person has that opinion, it doesn't mean that it's true or it's correct. And it has proven not to be. You know, I'm currently speaking and presenting up on mind sites, teaching people in mining how to meditate and do mindfulness. So wellness isn't flaky and it's not fluffy and wishy-washy. People are really finally starting to recognise it.
Oh, there's such a need up in the mines, isn't there? Such a need. But how are you finding people responding to that?
I've been really, really surprised by it. And to be honest, at first I really peeled things back. And again, that was my own fear of how are they going to accept this? Are they going to think it's a bit soft and fluffy, you know, because it's a harsher environment than I think most of us have ever experienced. But not everybody up there is either. And this year particularly, I've just gone, you know what? No, people are just going to get the whole lot. And particularly during coronavirus, it was amazing. Like we had limited numbers for how many we could have in classes, obviously due to social distancing, unfortunately having to turn people away and create private sessions or smaller splinter groups to be able to accommodate people. So it's been really well received, which is wonderful. I didn't expect it to be as well received as what it is. But then I think also own it. I unashamedly go and take all the bits and pieces that go with it, and that's what they like.
That's really good. And so is this what you just do when you're up north?
It's part of it, but it's a big part of it. I also sort of go in and help with some team building skills. I also often sort of at the beginning of they do little pre-start meetings before sessions, so I'll go in and do some warm-up stretches and just help to lift the energy. And I'll often listen to what's going on and what's topical, and then from there I'll create a little 5 to 10 minute talk to the different groups as I go around, as well as just help them out with rehab situations, because often there's sort of overuse injuries or fatigue management. So yeah, there's a whole suite of things that I do up there to help people out.
Sounds fantastic. What a great role. I love it.
Yeah, funny, but it's had its challenges, and there's been a few times I've gone, why? I mean, all of a sudden they sort of also go, why not you?
Exactly. Yes. Opening up your eyes to new horizons.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I saw myself doing things very differently, but the universe has got other plans for me, and that's okay. I'm quite all right with that.
Yep. And, you know, and I've learned a really hard lesson about getting out of your own way. And I don't know whether you've had to do that. Just from that one liner that you just gave me there, that just made me think of that. You're led to where you're needed to.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And when that happens, there's no stress. You just know this is where you're to be placed for a period of time. And then you learn what you need to do or how you show up and what your purpose is for that period of time. And off you go. Rather than planning the direction, you know. Previously yes, guilty of that.
100% me too. And one of the biggest things I had to do was just drop my ego and get out of my own way and go, okay, well, where do I need to be now? What do I need to do? And all of a sudden things started to come up that were directing me in that direction. So, and there was resistance. Don't get me wrong, there was a lot of resistance, but that's okay. I wanted to be presenting in high heels and business suits.
And what are you doing now? You're in go pants?
Biz and work boots.
Yeah, work biz gear. Yeah. PPE.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's so cool.
Do you think it's actually worthwhile getting a speaking coach?
I do. I've actually had several, three so far. Yeah, definitely. Your story is often evolving, like it changes quite a bit. My first one that was, I guess, where I sort of started to bring it together was probably more of a talk than a story, and I think people love a story. And then I had a speaking coach that specialised in storytelling, so I basically pulled my signature story apart and then stitched it all back together again. What I found is that if you go from one person, it's a bit like following someone's recipe, it's how they do it, but if you go to do other ways, you start to bring in different aspects. And like anything, you take out what you don't like and you put in what feels like a good fit for you. I did find that by going to the storytelling speaking coach, she really helped to refine and polish the story and give it a lot more texture and depth, which is well worthwhile. They're not cheap, but then there's a lot of work. I mean, I couldn't tell you how much money I've spent on this personal development.
In the speaking arena?
Oh, it's huge, yeah. But it's invaluable as well, you know, and if you want to be able to get yourself out there more, you need to have that compelling story and those skills to go with it.
Absolutely. What kind of things have you done out of your comfort zone because of public speaking?
The whole art of getting up and speaking and sharing a story publicly, a speaker described it like skydiving without a parachute, start naked.
Oh, wow, that's exposing yourself. Yeah, that's risky and risque.
Definitely, you're very vulnerable. Like, you feel very vulnerable. This is my personal story. How is it going to be received? Will people like it? Will they not like it? Learning how much to share and how much to pull back on. It's given me confidence. It's also helped. I've done a lot of extra work outside of it, bringing out different elements like comedy and metaphors and those sorts of things, so that when you do share a story, it's got a lot more depth to it than just talking. So, yeah, there's been quite a bit that's gone into it. Also just standing still, you know, that's not a terribly easy thing to do, especially when your nerves are completely running the show as well. Actually, as I'm talking there, remind me, Probably one of the most confronting things was I was part of a book launch where I had co-authored. We had a launch night of it. I was sharing another story at that event, and they asked me to be the first speaker. And that's pretty hard because you've got to warm up a cold room, and deliberately got there early and set up so I didn't see anybody coming in. And then I stupidly decided I needed to get water. And as I walked out, I saw all these speakers who were just people who I admired immensely coming in, and they were very well accomplished speakers. My heart just, I don't know, I think it stopped beating, and I felt like I wanted to throw up, to be honest.
Oh, dear. Yep.
Went out to the back of the green room, and I remembered I hadn't long been to an Eckhart Tolle retreat, and something he had said was, when you're feeling nervous, you're thinking about yourself, you're not thinking about the audience. So your ego is running the show. I just went outside and connected with my breath and my thoughts and pulled myself together, and then I got the call to had to be on stage. And it went off without a hitch. I just had to forget all these people in the room. That was probably one of the most confronting ones I had to do.
Well done for thinking quickly on your feet and getting to that point, because really you've only got one chance, haven't you?
I wanted them to see me speaking, you know. Yeah, it was important to me.
Where has it taken you?
Oh, it's taken me to all sorts of different places, actually. That's a really interesting question and one I have to give lots of thought to.
Has it been more of an inner journey? I mean, is there more confidence, self-esteem?
There's a lot more confidence, a lot more self-esteem. I've always been a fairly assertive person, but I've had to sort of develop more assertiveness in what I do because obviously there's challenges with it. But yeah, it has given me a lot of confidence. But also that confidence is different from probably some confidence that I had before, because it's combining confidence and humbleness, because you need both. You just can't have arrogance, I guess, is something that doesn't go down well.
There's almost like a superficial confidence that you can get, and that's where ego stands, sits or resides, whatever the word is. And then you've got this confidence where you feel good in your skin. Has it brought that element into your speaking these days? Do you feel more like that?
Yeah, and it's grounded. There's always elements of, I guess, fear's not the word. There's like every time I speak, there's always an element of a little bit of anxiety, like butterflies and those sorts of things, which I think you're always going to get. And I guess I've inverted that and sort of told myself that the day I don't feel that is probably the day to give it up, because I no longer care about what I do and I've just got arrogant about it. So that having that sense of nervous means that I'm growing a little bit more and I care about what I do. I just get really sweaty armpits, you know, I just get really upset by that.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Like, that means that you care, so it's okay.
You've spoken about choosing your wizards wisely.
Yes.
Talk us through this.
Choosing your wizards wisely, yeah. It's a path you have to go down, as difficult as it sounds, because it still helps to steer you in the right direction. Everybody brings with them a little gift and a little bit of knowledge, irrespectively of whether it's ones that you choose to leave behind or go ahead with. So, yeah, you just have to follow your intuition. So people might guide you and give you their opinion. The coaches that I've had, some of them I've moved on from and I probably wouldn't go back to, they still brought some wonderful learnings with them. So I think you've got to just go with it anyway. And pretty much anybody in the speaking industry I've spoken to have all had very expensive and challenging lessons that they've learned along the way. But what it does, it enriches you, because you are able to offer and bring more, because you kind of go, well, I know how that made me feel and I don't want another person to experience that. It's still an important part of the journey. I wouldn't trade it for anything. And each one has still brought some really wonderful things with that process.
One of the things I've learned about choosing teachers and mentors wisely, and this is more in Buddhist philosophy, but I also use it in everyday life, is that you observe someone. This is not a matter of days or weeks or months. It's actually years. This is where you get to look at how authentic they are in public or whether they're in a one-to-one. I know in this day and age, to observe someone for years may seem to be crazy, because maybe back in the day when this advice was put out, you did have that time, you know, whereas now people want it yesterday, they want things immediately. But I think the sentiment is really important to at least just observe before you dive in, just because lots of other people are diving and recommending people or a brand or whatever, does that mean that's actually suitable for you? And so I always take a step back. Sometimes the path less travelled is far more valuable than the one that is most common.
To be honest, the people that I have drawn in at different times have been a direct reflection of where I've been at that particular moment. this one was scary for me. And so my own feelings of inadequacy, I went there in a needy space, I guess, as opposed to, I don't know if I'm even articulating what I'm trying to say very well, but sometimes we just draw people into our lives at different times. And as I've gone through it, I guess like you're saying, I sit back a lot more and kind of go, do I really need this right now? Or am I just filling that gap with something else? Because sometimes that's what I would do. I would get some coaching when I was too early. And could somebody have told me that back then? Absolutely not. So my partner had said, Beck, you don't need this right now. What are you doing? I would have thought that I was being sabotaged. So it's interesting. I do think definitely sitting back and observing is, and also backing yourself. We just don't back ourselves enough. We know so much more than what we give ourselves credit for, rather than seek validation in other people as well.
And sometimes that just takes sitting and being rather than doing, doesn't it?
Absolutely. A lot of sitting and being and a lot less doing it.
COVID has been a blessing from that perspective, I think. for those of us who have been able to do that, I mean, to be honest, I haven't actually sat down yet, but I think for a lot of people, one of the positives that's come out of this, having a really good think about their own lives and maybe changing elements of it to slow down, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think it's made us all stop and look at what's really important. What is it that's really important to me right now? Where do I want to go? What do I want to do with this? It's been interesting. I've made some big changes as a result of it.
Oh, good. That's really good. Are you sticking to them?
So far, so good. Yeah. Okay.
You mentioned earlier about getting out of your own way, and I am a big believer in this, as I mentioned earlier too. So what do you actually mean by this statement?
A lot of us, we get a little bit stuck in, and I was certainly one of them, in fear and didn't do things through fear, or waiting until things were perfect or ducks were lined up and stuff were done. And when I found that I started to get the best traction, it's interesting when I've gone on to doing other different workshops and things with people as a participant, you don't always have to have everything all completely nutted out. It's okay to go forward and tweak and change things along the way. And there were things that I wasn't doing first. I had to have this done properly. I had to do this right. I had to have all these different things in place before I would set out and do something, which was really just stopping me. I had to enroll in one new course or something else before I could do that next step. And what that was actually holding me back from getting out there and doing my thing. You know, obviously have a plan. We always have to have a bit of a plan. But just drop perfectionism and just learn to be perfectly imperfect. And it's okay to learn as you go along. I did my yin yoga teacher training back in November in Bali, and a lecturer there said, you know, when we first started this out 7 years ago, we had no idea what we were doing, you know. And I kind of thought, I hear a lot of people who have done incredibly well start out like that. They didn't know. I mean, John Kabat-Zinn, who's done mindfulness, he's the same thing. He said, I didn't know that this was what I was doing in the beginning. I just knew it was going to be really wonderful. And I think that's what it is. It's like, okay, I've got this idea. And what's the next thing I need? The very next thing to do to get it happening, and just start doing it.
Yeah, that's a good example with John Kabat-Zinn. He's been doing meditation and mindfulness for about 45 years now or something. Yeah. That's been a very long time.
Yeah.
And he's a well-known name in mindfulness, certainly in the United States.
Yes.
Absolutely. As part of your plan, was it to actually study again, or was that just out of the blue?
COVID reassessed some things, and it meant spending more time up in the mining industry. And I thought, well, if I'm up there doing that, then I'm going to have a degree at the end of it. That's sort of where that came from. It's something I've always wanted to do, and I haven't done it. There it goes again. For fear, sometimes fear of, am I good enough to be able to do this? And also, it seemed indulgent to spend a lot of money, which is stupid. It's just stupid thinking, really. And I just thought, I don't know what the future's going to bring in terms of working for myself, whereas I've got the stability of an income by working up there. And I thought, well, by the end of it, then I just want to be able to have a degree by the end of it all.
Is this in psychology and marketing?
I'm just doing psychology for now. I'll wait and see whether I'll pursue the marketing one next year or not, whether I'll just stick with the psychology. Yeah, psychology is definitely my number one interest, and marketing sort of sits just underneath that.
It's a perfect complement to wellness. Yeah. Really good combination. Something I wanted to ask you, obviously still on the theme of courage, but just away from what we've just spoken about, is who's someone who's been a model of courage for you?
My father would be a wonderful example of courage. Dad was an SAS soldier in Vietnam, and the Australian Army training in Vietnam, and I only learnt this morning that there was only 1,000 of them that were selected to do that. So that's a huge act of courage to do those sorts of things. I guess that's where my passion for wellness and workplace wellness in particular comes into play. Dad never really sort of settled very well back into civilian life, but then after he did, he was in the Department of Corrections and he was in a remand centre, and on 3 separate occasions he found people who had died by suicide. And so at 55, he was diagnosed as totally and permanently incapacitated and had to retire. Times he didn't cope very well, but to serve and serve in incredibly challenging environments and situations is a massive act of courage, I think.
Absolutely. And so I guess he would have suffered from PTSD?
Absolutely. And that went undiagnosed for many, many years. That only was diagnosed around the same time that he became totally and permanently incapacitated. It just wasn't known about. Yeah, so they finally acknowledged that that was attributed to his service in the military as well as his service in the Department of Corrections.
What have you gleaned from him and his story? And do you see similarities in your being courageous in certain parts of your life and his?
Yeah. Dad didn't take care of himself, so he ended up with early onset dementia and passed away a couple of years ago with that. We sort of saw a really heartbreaking unravelling of Dad. So taking care of yourself is something that has been paramount for me. My personal motto and mantra is self-care's not selfish, it's an act of love for those you lead. So it's really about being able to make sure that you are really looking after yourself and as a good role model. Dad always taught me, one of the things he was great at too, was he was like, it doesn't matter what you do in life, so long as you do it well, you'll succeed. So never ever let status or position or anything else ever stand in your way of being able to do anything. I remember I was in high school and I was doing work on the checkouts and things, and some people would be sort of quite rude to me as a kid and I'd get quite upset by it and take it on board, you know, and he was like, no, never mind that. You know, there's plenty of people that start out those and they end up going on to managing and doing different things. So he always taught me that no matter what you do in life, just do it with integrity and you'll do well with it. We all aren't here forever, but just seeing what it was like and how difficult it was for us going through that was, I wouldn't want that to happen for my children if my lifestyle choices could prevent that.
Yeah, sure. So you've just taken it upon yourself to try to minimise, go down that path.
It's a difficult thing to watch, you know, but again, there's beautiful lessons in it as well.
I spent many years working in aged care as a clinical aromatherapist, actually, and it's a pretty amazing position to be in to see people with dementia and what that is like, and also the different types of dementia. And I just remembered thinking I would not want to put that kind of responsibility on my family as well. It's pretty full on, but it was a fantastic experience working there, and certainly in a position like being a clinical aromatherapist, not everyone has that opportunity. What does courage mean to you?
I'm stealing words from other people here, but a book I read when I left my ex-husband and my family life was chaotic, it was a book by Susan Jefferson, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. Courage to me is that it's like, yes, okay, I've got fear coming up here, but I'm going to keep moving forward anyway.
And do you feel that you are courageous?
Yeah, I do. It's a big part of everything that I do, actually. It's important because I feel like by doing acts of courage, it demonstrates also to your children, I've got a responsibility to my kids to show them that we all have fear, but we can all push through it and do things as well. And not just for my kids, just for humankind, you know. We hold ourselves back from doing so many things through fear. I do feel like I'm courageous, definitely.
Great, because fear certainly can be debilitating, that's for sure. One last question, because it is time to start looking at wrapping up, and that is, do you think that you are walking your own path? Because it does take courage to do that. You know, in order to walk your own path, you may let people down, you may disappoint them, there may be sacrifices along the way. So where are you at with that?
I definitely do, and a perfect example of that was when I was in real estate. And don't get me wrong, real estate's a fantastic industry. It wasn't aligned for me. And I remembered feeling this real feeling of resentment and feeling really, really trapped. I had a big mortgage, I had a young family, and I needed to make money to be able to keep all of those things happening. And it wasn't until sort of after I'd done this crazy run, which that's another story altogether, that I realised that I needed to start walking my own path. And one of my biggest fears then was putting financial pressure on the household, because to walk away from a high-paying income to go and follow what it is you really want to do, there was risks involved. But I knew that I just couldn't do it anymore. I had to do this for me. It's been an interesting path. It's taken many twists and turns, but I really do feel like I'm walking it. There's aspects of it that aren't exactly where I want to be right now, but I don't know if we ever find that.
That's really good to know. At least then you can say confidently that you're doing what you want to do in your life.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah. And it's just about learning to accept that sometimes we want to be doing these things right now, different aspects right now, but there's other plans in place and maybe you're not quite ready for that yet. Maybe you need to do something else while that's happening. But yeah, I definitely feel like I'm well and truly walking my path. It's a really empowering feeling, actually. There's real satisfaction in doing what aligns with your soul or your heart's calling.
Absolutely. And it sounds like you're on that path, so keep going. Stay courageous. It's been really engaging and enlivening, so I really appreciate you being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, Sana.
Next time you hear a professional public speaker on stage, you can now appreciate that it takes a long time to master the craft or get to a point of refined prowess. Rebecca, I won't say the word perfection. Rebecca's journey has highlighted this, and as Rebecca knows all too well, it's always a work in progress. To make contact with Rebecca Hannon, visit courageunraveled.com/podcasts. Her details are in the show notes. To grow and flex your very own courage muscle, please listen to the podcasts and grab yourself a copy of the Courage Journal, which can be found on the website and online platforms like Amazon and Booktopia. The good news is that there's now the option to buy a hard and a soft copy. The difference? It's price. Heck, buy two and offer one as a gift. Thank you to the kind people who love the podcast episodes and who have supported the show by leaving a review. You too can leave a review via your favourite podcast channel, or you can leave a Google review if you like what you hear. Now, this comes from Lindy. Sana is a kind and grounded soul to be around. Her Courage Unraveled interviews are inspiring, uplifting, and oozes honesty. Highly recommended to listen to if you're needing a fix of genuine human conversations. Thanks so much, Lindy, for that. I'm Sana Turnock, your Courage Unraveled host. Until next time.